Good evening. I hope everybody is doing well tonight. Hello? Yeah, there we go. This morning when Adam had problems with the mic, I was kind of excited because I was hoping I could get up here and say, well, due to technical difficulties, this evening's sermon has been postponed. But I can't do that because they fixed it. As always, I want to say thank you to the men who get up here and teach and preach, and the class leaders and men like Jack Seckinger, who's developing skills to try to present. He did such a fine job Wednesday night. Dallas Crabtree, you're an inspiration to me. Just the reading and his help. And I want to encourage everybody who participates to continue to do the work. It's not comfortable. It's stressful. But that's how you grow. That's part of God's plan and the way he made the world and his natural law. And we got to tweak ourselves a little bit and push ourselves a little bit and make ourselves a little bit uncomfortable to get the fruit, and the only way we do that is to work hard. So you guys are, I appreciate it because I know what you go through, and it's still always a little uneasy and unnerving for me. Last time I preached, I went a little long, so tonight I'm going to try to do better. I think this sermon will be a little bit more quickly, and it's definitely relatively simple, I think, in concept, and a little bit more straightforward. This reading out of John chapter 19, where Pilate has interviewed Jesus and questioned him and then sent him back to the leaders of the Jewish people, and they were yelling, "Crucify him, crucify him." And what has struck me about this is their statement from the chief priests. It says, "We have no king but Caesar." And to me, that was an amazing statement. These folks have been looking for a king for centuries, right? For a long time. They were looking for the Messiah, their Savior, somebody to come rescue them, to lead them, to conquer their foes, and to take them out of the oppression that they had suffered. And they were brazen enough at this very moment to reject the Christ, the Messiah who came to them right in front of their very own eyes, and yet they rejected him and publicly pronounced, "We have no king but Caesar." So it prompted me to ask the question, why do we reject Christ? Why did they reject Christ? And what is the answer to that? And that's what I want to talk about this evening. Why does man reject Christ? Like we talked about, they brazenly said, "We have no king but Caesar." His very own people, his own nation, the people who were supposed to be prepared for him, looking for him, knew the prophecy and understood what his purpose and mission was, failed to see that. Why? Let's talk just briefly about our place. I'm going to my happy place. We all like to have our own special little place in life. Right now you're sitting on a pew that you consider your own little place, right? That's where you're comfortable. Anytime in life where we're given something new, we like to make it our own, right? We go to school, and it's a little unnerving till we get our locker assignment, right? Then we have a place to put our books. We can get organized. I know where I can go between class, and now I'm a little more comfortable. I have control over a little bit of space. Playing athletics, when you finally got assigned your locker, you had a place to put your equipment, you had a place to get dressed, a place to get undressed. We had our own little comfortable, arranged space. Parents are real familiar with this when you're having a new child come along, right? You get their room all fixed and ready, and it's their place. The concept of having our own space or our own place is really familiar to us. So the same thing with our offices at work. Bella and Shelly went over to Houston this weekend and did a little shopping, and Bella came home showing me all of her stuff, and she was all excited, and one of the things she did was show me a little purse she had got. And she said, "Daddy, this is going to be my purse for next year." And she opened up, she said, "Look, I got room right here for my phone, and I got room right here to put some change, and I got room over here to put this and that." She's already organizing her own little space to make her more comfortable with what she's going to do next year. Our own little happy space that we like to create in our lives with all the things that we become involved with is one of the things that we as human beings like to do. Now, once we have our space, we don't want anybody messing with it, right? Somebody sits in your pew spot, it makes you a little uncomfortable for the most part. Not that you're going to get real upset about it, but you don't really like it. If you let your own human emotion come out and you didn't control that, it bothers you at some level. Some of us maybe more than others, depending on how we're made up psychologically, right? Somebody messes with your locker at school, they're invading your own space. We don't want anybody changing our arranged, organized space that we've made comfortable for ourselves. Just leave it alone. You got your own space. I got my own space. I don't want anybody invading it, right? And we don't like somebody else trying to tell us how to arrange our own space, right? You got your locker. You do it like you want. I got my locker. You got your home, right? I like to sit on the pew with my legs crossed. You don't have to tell me that I don't need to do that, right? You can sit straight. I want my legs crossed. Those things make us uncomfortable. Within our own space, we like to do our own thing, our own way. And if we're challenged with that, it makes us a little bit uncomfortable. And the same concept, we kind of all have our own kingdom, right? We have our own nation. We're all little bitty kings, right? When we get a home, it's, you know, my place, right? That's where I control things. I'm the so-called ruler there. And you have something else in your life that applies to you too, whatever that may be. Maybe it's your car. Maybe it's your work office space, and you set the borders with some of those things, right? If you're building a house, for sure, where you put the walls, right? Where you're going to sleep, where you're going to entertain folks, and you guide how you're going to operate in your own little nation or your own little kingdom. And so we determine what we believe to be acceptable or unacceptable within our kingdom too, right? We decide what I'm going to allow, the kinds of people I'm going to allow into my space, my little kingdom that I control. If you don't behave in a certain way, I'm not going to participate with you. You may not be as welcome into my home, or I may not hang out with you, right? I only let certain people in my own little kingdom, my own little nation. Once again, the same concept with our own space, with our own kingdom. We don't want people messing with it. These sayings up here are relatively common, right? Who made you king, right? I'm king in my place. Right? Who said you could come over here and be king of my... You're not my boss, right? We hear kids say these things, or we say these things teasingly with one another. At times we desire to get away from the rules of other kingdoms or what other people do, because here we don't do it that way. In our house, in our home, it's done differently. And at times, because we lack so much control, we don't want to listen to people that know better. Your dad, your mom, somebody you respect comes in to try to, hey, your kingdom over there is not running quite right. Why don't you do it this way? And we don't like to listen to that at times. So, why did these people reject Christ? Why do we reject Christ? John 11:48 tells us the answer to that. If we let him alone, this is the Jewish leader speaking, if we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him and the Romans will come and do what? Take away our place and our nation. They didn't want anybody coming into their own territory, their own place, where they were nice and comfortable. They had it arranged the way that they had wanted it, and they didn't want that taken away. And there are reasons why they didn't want it taken away. But they're no different than we are. They were comfortable with the position they had gotten and acquired, the relationships they had worked out with the Roman government, and their own place and their own nation was challenged by Jesus Christ. And so they rejected him. In the same way we reject attention to us changing our own place or our own nation. They did not want to align their lives with the way Jesus did things. So how did that happen? How did that happen? Well, John 8:37 tells us that. It says, I know you're Abraham's descendants, Jesus talking here, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. If his word doesn't have a place in us, we're definitely not going to try to align our place in our own nation with what his is. And there's going to present some conflict there. And if his word doesn't have a place in us, there's no way that we can ever make his place our place, and we're not going to accept him. And we're going to feel the stress and the conflict of him invading our space, and therefore we will also reject him. And like I said, that's not an easy concept. Letting Christ own our place, define our place, arrange our place, our lives, the things we get involved with, how we behave, the people we tend to, the way we spend our time. It's not so easy, right? And the reason it's not so easy is because we have value put into those things. I put time and energy and effort into my own space, right? As a result of that, I've built value. I've sacrificed things to make my life how I want it, to have my home like I want it, to have my office like I want it, to direct my family the way I want it. And if you try to tell me different, I got skin in the game. I don't want to change that. I think I know it. And that makes it more difficult. Christ has his way, and it doesn't always match our way. And our place in our nation doesn't always want to abide by that. His rules don't always make sense to us. Because of our own pride, we think we know better. We think we're best at it. We think we understand our own family or myself better or my own wife better or my own business better. Right? So my pride tells me I'm better. And especially if I don't understand some of the things he expects of me. If I don't make sense to him, I tend to rely on myself, especially if I think they've worked pretty well for me. I'm going to do it my way, not his way. So pride gets in our way. And our own physical needs, sometimes, you know, needs that are perfectly normal and healthy for the most part, get in our way because they become more important than his way. And our desires and, of course, our own physical wants. And we don't like to change those things. When Jesus outlines the behaviors I'm supposed to participate in and not, a lot of times they don't align with what I want and what I think is best, and that creates some conflict, and it makes it a little bit more difficult. And as a result, just like the leaders of that time rejected Christ, I also will reject Christ. I don't want him in my space. Go take care of your own space, Jesus. You're not wanted here. I got it under control. These are some of the things that Christ said, some of his teachings, and I've just listed a few of them. But it starts to make sense why we don't like him in our space, right? Whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other also. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, you go with him 2 miles. Love your enemy. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who persecute you. From a human standard, these things don't all add up. These are not normal emotions. These are not normal human reactions. In our own space, in our own kingdom, these are not our rules. Unless we've aligned them with his rules, then they may be. Love your enemy, bless those who persecute you, pray for those who spitefully use you. He who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. In my space, my family's pretty important, right? In his space, he's more important. I just thought this was funny because some of these rules, this is about the way it makes us feel, right? How do I do this? How do I do the things that Christ asked me to do? Is it possible? We often feel frustrated and discouraged as we work through those things. And it's work, right? None of these things are easy. I want my space to be, you know, comfortable and relaxing, right? I want my kingdom to kind of chill, right? Well, if Christ comes into your space, you're going to have to work, and you're going to be challenged, and you're going to get frustrated, and you're going to get discouraged, and you're going to feel like this, right? These are some of the other things that Jesus teaches, because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life. If you want to be perfect, go and sell what you have. The wages of sin is death. Yeah, you can participate and have a lot of fun doing things I told you not to do, but the results are death. And we don't want to hear that. The things you really like and you want to do, you don't want anybody telling you you shouldn't do them, right? The wages of sin is death. If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He tells you he has the answers, and they're free for any of us to take. But yet, when he says things we don't like, we want to reject him. Right? If you love me, keep my commandments. What? I mean, I got to do what you say. If you say, I love you, I love you. I love you, Christ. Right? I want to do what you say until it comes to some of these things that I don't like, because in my own space, in my own nation, my rules are different. But if you love me, you will keep my commandments. These are hard things and frustrating things to deal with. And as a result, we often reject Christ. I put this slide in here briefly just because I want to make the point. Yes, there's difficult things that Christians are called to do. But he also says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Okay, that's all about attitude. The way that we approach the difficult things he asks us to do matters a lot. And when we surrender free will to him, it does become easy. Because the things he asks us to do are only hard in our own mind. They're physically usually not real difficult. It's our pride or our wants or our desires that get in the way. And our attitude matters a lot. And that's a whole other sermon. So this troubles us, right? It troubles us to have to do these things, or we don't understand them, and they make us afraid. And Jesus also answers that. John 14, verses 1 through 3. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, and I go to do what? Prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And this is all about trust and faith, right? He has our place. And his place is much better than our place. His rules are much better than our rules. His nation, his kingdom, is much better than our kingdom. If we trust him and place our faith in him and convert our place to being his place. So what needs to be our response? How do we respond to his call? Well, we make our place his place. And we remove the conflict, right? If there's any conflict with our own rules, our own guidelines, just change them. Tear the paper up. Make yours his, right? And all of a sudden, it gets a lot more comfortable. Remove your own wants and desires, right? That we may be one with him. That our will may be aligned with his will. John 17, 20 through 23. So who gives him the right to define the rules of our place, right? You don't let too many people do that but you. So why should you let Christ? The Jews weren't prepared to do that, and most of us aren't prepared to do that. So why should we give him the right to define our place and our own nation by his guides? Romans 5, 6 through 8 tell us that. For when we were still without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, he died for us. Yeah, he took your place. He took your place, and that gives him the right to define our place. He died in our place. Our Creator, our Lord, our Savior, our Messiah, and our King took our place. And it makes no sense not to give him our place, right? It makes no sense to not give him our nation and align it with what he wants us to do. Romans 8 and 6 says to be for Romans 8 and 6 says, for to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. To remove our own thinking and our own desires is only going to produce death, and to understand that and focus on spiritual things and building a spiritual kingdom and a spiritual place produces life and peace. And it's well worth it. This is what he did. This is your place. That cross is your place. He's given us the free will to define our own place, to use it how we want to. And most of us, that's what we do, and we struggle trying to align that with him. But in reality, this is your place. It's not his place. That's not the place of our King and our Messiah and our Savior. But he did it. He did it so he could have the authority and the right to command us and teach us and guide us and get us home by defining what our place should be and what our nation should be. So what do? Declare him to be your King. Let his word have its place in you. Let it define who you are, how you think, what you do, how you treat others, how you run your home, how you run your business, how you are a wife, how you are a husband, how you are a student. And give him your place and your nation. Focus on the spiritual and not the carnal. Arrange your life to match his way, because the place he has prepared for you and his children is way better than anything that you could possibly imagine for yourself. His place for you is way better than the place you've designed for yourself. His place for you is way more comfortable than the place you've designed for yourself. His place for you is full of much more joy and much more peace than the place you've designed for yourself. Why do we make this so hard? Why do we reject him? Well, we reject Christ for the same reason the people did at that time, because we don't want him to take away our place. We don't want him to take away our nation. We're a little bit too comfortable with who we are and what we think. And so we say no to his call. So what do? Let's make our place and let's make your place his place. That's the end of my sermon. I hope it has given you some things to think about. I enjoyed working it up and thinking about some of those things this evening. I finished fast. I tried to give you back some time that I stole from you last time. And hopefully y'all will forgive me for that. And in the future, if I ever need to go long, your patience and kindness so much meant a lot to me last time. I appreciate it. So I tried to give some of that back to you tonight. As we think about the invitation song, if for some reason your place has not been his place and you want to fix that and correct that, we'll be here to pray for you and to welcome you back and encourage you to try to work on doing that. If for any reason you've never called on him, you've never been baptized into him, you're not one with him and you're not in him and you need to do that, and you want to begin making your place his place, why don't you come while we stand and sing?